Thank you for tuning into the VF1 show with VF and Vincenzo, the podcast that discusses all things business, marketing, politics, and government within the world of Formula One. If that's your thing, then you found the right place. So without further ado, it's lights out and away we go.
We are back. And so is Formula One, at least this week. We had cars on track today. We have cars on track tomorrow. Actually, as you're listening to this, it would be yesterday and then right now, because you'll be probably listening to this as there's cars on track, day two of testing. I'm your host, Vincenzo Landino. On the other side of the line, as always, VF. Vanessa, how are you doing?
I'm good. Yeah. It's a glorious day in Austin, Texas. How are you?
Fantastic. There was good. Cars on track, as I mentioned, which is exciting. And the season is here. It's like since such a lull of sports, aside from European football and there's Champions League, which is on right now as we're talking, and Italian Serie A is going on, EPL, all that stuff. But for American sports, there's no NFL. Personally, not a big NBA fan. March Madness is coming up, which is the only time I watch college basketball, which is usually exciting. But there's no baseball, which I'm also not a huge consumer of anymore. But there is no baseball happening either. So it's kind of one of those like slow times of year, yeah. It feels like for sport. But yeah, here we are. We just had the Daytona 500 in NASCAR. And it feels like there is noise in the air, especially when Formula One is back on track and we have something to talk about again, right?
Hallelujah.
Yeah. So today's episode, I want to talk a little bit about the Christian Horner situation, which love to get your thoughts and your direction on it. But also I think just the situation in general, not necessarily what he may or may not have done, but just the way right. this whole situation is playing out. And then we'll talk a little bit about testing, what we saw, what we think the direction is for some of the teams, maybe. Obviously I'm not super technical, but I think some things are pretty easy to observe. So let's jump right in it with Horner. It's and I'll kind of tee this one up for you, but there's rumor, right? It's all speculation at the moment that Christian Horner did some inappropriate things with, it seems like, a female employee of Red Bull. Whether he was sending inappropriate photos or he was strong-arming and using his position of power to treat employees improperly. I've heard kind of both things. I actually don't even know which one is what they're claiming to be investigating him for, which goes to say a lot about how this whole situation's been handled. It feels very like all over the place. With what they are claiming, and then you hear something about, well, this needs to be settled before the season starts, and then others are like, nope, they have to take time for the investigation, and it's like, is this cut and dry or not? I mean, it's like, what are we doing here? And it just feels like another one of those situations that gets bumbled by. Yeah. I don't know if it's PR. I don't know if it's marketing. I don't know if it's the FIA. I don't know if it's, Liberty Media, FON. Like, I don't know where this stuff gets bumbled up. But you've got to assume if there's smoke, there's some fire. And if there's accusations, there at least has to be now some sort of investigation that either clears him or doesn't. But there has to be answers, right? Like you have to get answers out of this. It can't just be a situation where we just forget about it. Season started. Like we'll worry about it later, right? That's not what this is. So I'd love to hear what your thoughts are on the matter, both from the perspective of what may have actually happened and from the perspective of how it's all being handled.
Well, I mean, you brought up the two points. It's either something that was sexually inappropriate or that he was being too forceful as a boss. And it's the fact that there's such a discrepancy in what it actually is one thing, but something else that a lot of people have brought up that is something you kind of can't really ignore at this point either is that why is it that Dutch media seems to be the only news outlet that has the inside on any bit of information? Anything that seems to be coming out from this is coming from Dutch media, right? So that's kind of confusing for some people, considering the fact that Red Bull is a UK company. So that's, a lot of people see this as the Jos Verstappen effect. Maybe Jos and Christian Horner had a falling out. Maybe something happened. Maybe this is the Verstappen family doing, you know, some nefarious things behind the scenes. Again, we don't know the truth on any of this stuff. This is all speculation, but because this is coming from Dutch media, it lends some level of, I won't say interest, but it does make this more unique, right? Then there's also the Helmut Marko situation. I remember in October, it was rumored that Christian Horner was trying to get rid of Helmut Marko. That was big rumor around the paddock that he wanted to be able to control Red Bull F1 fully. He wanted Helmut Marko completely out of the picture. He thought he was unhinged. He was saying a bunch of things. I mean, and we know Helmut Marko is unhinged. But at the same time, the juxtaposition between the things that Helmut Marko has said publicly versus the things that Christian Horner has said publicly. I mean, Christian Horner is vanilla compared to Helmut Marko. So we've always said that if things were said, or not we've always, but in the last couple weeks, we've said that if things were said that were completely out of pocket by Christian Horner, it had to have been something that would have violated a major, major law, not only in the UK, but violated, you know, their own terms of employment. Because again, going to what Helmut Marko has said versus what Christian Horner has said, two very, very different thought processes there. So that's an interesting observation. Is Helmut Marko behind this? Does Helmut Marko feel threatened by Christian Horner? Again, we don't know these things. And then there is the potential fallout. I'm hearing that as early as the 28th, Horner is expected to leave Red Bull. Okay, this is posted by a couple of different sites today. Nothing really, I wouldn't say anything really has legs at this point, but I do know that there was an internal meeting today in Bahrain with the full team. So, I mean, was it being announced that Christian Horner was going to be leaving? Also, why would he be there front and center during the car launch if they expected him to be out 2 weeks later? Maybe was it to keep things as normal so that people didn't talk about this? There's just a lot of different moving parts that are really, really weird in all of this that we don't have a lot of continuity. At least if we knew what was actually going on, maybe we would have something to springboard these observations, these conversations from, but we still don't exactly know what's going on. And I think that's where a lot of this is put into question. And too, if he is relieved, if he does leave Red Bull, are we ever going to really find out what happened there? Because that is a massive, massive movement. I mean, he built up Red Bull to what it is. You can't deny that. And also, what does Red Bull do in his absence this year? So it's, and I have also heard that that some executives would take over his role. Some Red Bull executives would take over his role at Red. A lot of this stuff doesn't make sense. And right now it's just a jumble of information. And, you know, we're trying to parse through it like everybody else is. But unfortunately, Nobody really seems to know what's going on, including UK media people. They're basically taking everything from Dutch media. So, you know, I wish that there was more to kind of report on this and to assess from, but that's pretty much what we've got.
I like what I heard from Total Wolf. I mean, who's, I think, the de facto, between him and Horner, they are the biggest names in team principals, right? They're the biggest deals. And Toto said, Formula One and what the teams do, we stand for inclusion, equality, fairness, diversity. And that's not only talking about it, but living it day in and day out. And I think this is the standards that we are setting ourselves. We are a global sport, one of the most important sports platforms in the world, and we are role models. But having said that, there's a lot of speculation that's been happening over the last weeks. Speculation that we have heard of and lots of things that are going on. And what I think is important at this stage for a process with rigor. I think what Red Bull has started as an independent investigation, if this is done in the right way with transparency and with rigor, I think that's something that we need to look at. What the outcomes are and what it means for Formula One and how we can learn from that. Because we want to talk about racing cars and we want to talk about the sport rather than these kind of very, very critical topics that are more than just a team's issue. It's a phenomenon, or it's an issue for all Formula One and in general for every individual that works out there. So, you know, I guess there's a little bit of a kind of a PR friendly statement, but he did say a few things that I thought were interesting. Like, you know, the fact that what do these outcomes mean for Formula One? What can we learn from it? You know, whatever the outcome is. And he made the statement that we want to talk about race cars and we want to talk about the sport, but there's very critical topics that are more than just, you know, one specific team's issue. And, you know, that becomes a Formula One phenomenon. And, you know, without saying it, I think I'll say what, you know, what Toto is probably implying is that, you know, issues like this can affect the value of the sport, value, you know, that it affects the bottom line. Not only does it affect the individuals involved in the misconduct, but, you know, now you're affecting the livelihoods of everybody involved in the sport because, you know, and you've said this on the show before, like, this is not a serious sport. This is not this, you know, this becomes not a serious operation. And that's the biggest thing. You know, I'm going to maybe take this a little bit in a different direction right now, but it's still the same kind of vein. You know, you take all of these other issues that have come up with FIA, with, you know, F1 media, there always seems to be something, right? And it gives you this vibe of like, are these people serious? Are they actually serious about, you know, you want to consider yourself the pinnacle of this, of all motorsport. There's so many different series out there. So, and you want to consider yourself the pinnacle of all motorsport. And it's like, you always have these issues. I would think that if this investigation doesn't go over, in a way that satisfies the parties involved, we're probably going to hear more of this. Quite frankly, I don't see a scenario where Horner can just walk away from this and be like, oh yeah, we're good. We're going to start the season. No big deal. I don't see it. Now, that's with no knowledge of what actually happened. But if any of those accusations are moderately accurate, you have to wonder, how could a team not take action, right? Could we really start a season with something like this hanging over a team principal's head and the investigation not be complete?
Yeah.
That to me screams like, you know, screams issues. So I would be very, I'm obviously going to follow pretty closely, you know, what is going to happen when it happens. But like you said, there doesn't seem to be any cohesive story or, you know, reporting on it. It's very jumbled. There's a lot of little pieces here and there, and it'll be very, very fascinating when it all comes to a head as to what direction things go in. You know, we'll be able to know very quickly whether this was a serious investigation or whether this was just a, yeah, we had to do this to, you know, make him, you know, to make sure we look like we did something. And I, you know, I sure as hell hope that's not the case.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a very unique situation right now for Formula One, because the sport has never been more visible than it is now. The sport has never had such a diverse fan base as it has now, or as it does now. And I think that, again, that puts Formula One under the microscope right now in terms of how is it handling misconduct allegations? Because we know how things were handled in the past. It was still a boys' league. The guys did whatever they wanted, got away with whatever they wanted. It was a very different world back then. Mm. Now we've got social media to contend with. We've got all sorts of shit to contend with now. And it's not even so much the PR game. It's the, how do you put yourself in a situation to where allegations like that could even carry water? You know what I mean? What did Horner do to actually put himself in that position, if it is true? I mean, he's denying it. He's completely saying that's not true. None of it is true. Is there proof, and will we see the proof? Is there proof that he actually tried to, I've heard that he tried to pay off a female staffer. I've heard that he tried to pay off a female a journalist to not release the story. It's just, there's no continuity here. And I wish that we had something tangible to go off of. And that apparently the hearing last week was an all day hearing. And it's an independent hearing too. So we weren't expecting to hear anything in the immediate aftermath of that. But it makes you wonder just how many tentacles there are, just how much legal is actually involved in this, and how much evidence there actually is. So I don't know. It's a unique thing right now, because this hasn't happened in the sport, at least not at this magnitude. And especially just at the very beginning of the season. So if he is canned, and I was talking about this with someone, how does this affect their driver lineup potentially for 2025? I was talking to someone about this earlier who said that, I said, Carlos Sainz is going to go to Red Bull in 2025. That's my prediction. I'm sticking to it. This guy on Twitter said, I hope so. My concern is Red Bull would have to move more quickly than they want, with Sainz having other options. Imagine Sauber, Audi already likely blowing up his phone, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm thinking, Sainz, of course, he's linked to Audi because of his father. But if Red Bull would really want to kind of hush the rumors on Christian Horner really quickly, if he does end up departing the team, it would behoove them to move faster to sign a driver, to kind of let people, okay, we're moving on. We've got 2025 to look forward to. So I'm really wondering, if Horner does step down, how quickly they move. And today, testing, his father, Carlos Sainz's father, was seen talking to Horner, Helmut Marko, and Adrian Newey. So, I mean, this is the whirlwind of Formula One, you guys. It just, when one thing happens, it automatically dovetails into something else. So, I mean, we don't know what's going to happen. I guess we'll all just be kind of holding our breath for the 28th. But, you know, so far, all things that we've been told are going to happen haven't happened so far. But again, there is the whole thing about Lewis Hamilton, every time he posts a shirtless selfie, shit hits the fan. Something goes down. Something major goes down. So is this the major thing that's going to follow his recent shirtless selfie?
We don't know.
We don't know. It's the legend of Sir Lewis Hamilton. That is just, it's, we are bewildered by that, but you can't deny that it is actually a phenomenon.
No, it's definitely become a legitimate precursor to things happening. So,
yeah.
Yeah, so. I don't know. I'm, like I said, I'm very, I don't know that I don't know that I see Horner, you know, leaving. Like, I just,
yeah,
it's one of those, you know, do we really think like they're suddenly going to find something in the next week? I don't know. I'd like to think that they already know the scenario and they're just trying to plan either way.
Yeah. Like, you think they know the outcome already?
The thing is, like, it seems pretty cut and dry.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't really seem like it's one of those things that is too, like, difficult for them to figure out. Right? Like, whether it's accurate or it's not, whether the allegations, especially if, let's just say, the part where he, okay, you tried to pay someone off. If that's accurate and they know that, then what's the, like, what's the holdup here?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
Conspiring to suppress information. I think we would know about that by now. I think.
Right.
It's, but that's the thing too. Everybody talks in this sport. Everybody talks. Even if a team thinks that we have something under complete lock and key, no one's going to say anything. We know that's not true. Things get leaked mm-hmm. all the time. There are so, and here's the thing. Things get leaked, whether true or untrue, because a lot of times teams will leak some information to see if they have a mole. And that is because this is a very, very secretive sport, where you don't want to give your opponents any possible leg up on what's happening internally or with your strategy or with your car. So this is a sport where you think you're hiding everything under lock and key, but there's always somebody willing to talk. And again, the fact that nothing really tangible has come out of this so far either means that Red Bull employees take their NDAs very, very seriously, or there's just nothing to say, you know? So I don't know. This is a very weird time. And again, I think I hate the fact that we're talking about this and we're continuing to have to talk about this, despite the fact that the season is here, despite the fact that we had cars on track today. We're going to have cars on track tomorrow. We have a race coming up. The season is here and we're going to have one hell of a musical chairs of driver lineup reconfiguration and free agency this upcoming season. And it seems like if this is the shadow that's sort of hanging over the sport going into the season, if he is let go or if he is retained, there's always going to be people who think, well, if he doesn't step down, well, he did it. And we know he did it. Without any information, you're always going to have the people that are going to then go after Red Bull, whether they, you know, they lack evidence or not to support that. That is now their thought. That's now what they believe. So I really hope that whatever the outcome of this is, that Red Bull provides actual evidence, actual support documentation for why things are the way they are, why they chose to go in the direction that they chose to go in. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, yeah. This sport, it thrives off of drama.
I'm going to throw this out there as a little bit of maybe bait, but is there any part of you that it's kind of doesn't even care about the season.
This season is going to be a weird one. It's going to be strange. I think what we saw today with Verstappen and with the Red Bull car, we know it's going to be a monster. We know that car is going to be absolutely psycho. We still don't know the full power of that car. So it kind of... Right. you already think, and I posted this as a joke, but I'm not actually joking, that we're going to have the Drivers' Championship wrapped up by Monaco, potentially the Constructors wrapped up by Austin. That kind of seems on par with the points process where there were things have gone the past couple of seasons, but I'm not really concerned about who is going to finish the season, like what the actual driver championship looks like this season. I don't care about that. I am more concerned with how Ferrari gets that car tuned for someone like Lewis Hamilton, how much Lewis Hamilton is going to be actually in on Ferrari meetings this year to get the car ready for next season, what that's going to entail. I'm curious about where Carlos Sainz goes. I'm curious about where all the drivers are going to go. And I think that's why this season is so critical for so many drivers to perform well, that I think we can look past Max Verstappen. I think we can look past what Red Bull is actually doing on track. And I think we can focus on a lot of the midfield, even down, because there is going to be a lot of movement happening, and there's a lot at stake for these teams and for these drivers. So, and there are a lot of rookies that want to get in. And so they're hoping that the veteran drivers do bad. They're hoping that drivers like Daniel Ricciardo do poorly, knowing that he'll be out of a seat. So there is a lot at stake this season. I'm excited for that. I'm excited because everything that happens this year is essentially going to make up what F1 looks like in the final year of this set of regulations. And that's always interesting, seeing how the regulations kind of started and where they finish. So that I'm excited about. So I'm not saying this season is a wash. I think that we can all just, if we can put Max Verstappen out of sight, out of mind, we're going to have a really, really good season. But I don't know. What are your thoughts? You're a Ferrari guy. There's got to be a lot of feelings happening right now.
I mean, you know, there's obviously the excitement of Hamilton coming next year and the hype that will bring. And I know it's only one day of testing. And like you said, you know, there's, it's hard to look at the Red Bull on track today with Max driving it and think that anybody has a shot. And again, I don't want to be like sky is falling. Oh my God. And you know, like there's no shot for anybody. I don't think there's much of a shot for anybody. I don't. Right. But I will say that, the Red Bull just, it looked like there was a lap that Max ran, and the car looked so smooth. I mean, it barely looked like he wasn't fighting the car at all. It was like the absolute smoothest I think I've seen a car, right? And so it definitely is slightly disheartening. and that's from just like a Ferrari fan standpoint, right? Like, okay, great. there's no shot in hell here. With that said, you're right. I definitely think that there's so much that's going to happen over the next year or two with different drivers moving places, different teams potentially jumping in. It's definitely a season where you're like, okay, this is like a jump off point to bigger and better things. One thing we actually didn't even talk about, and we probably should, is, you know, Ford, Red Bull is supposed to be making, you know, powertrains together. Ford with this whole situation with Horner is now like, hey, we're very interested in what's going on with this investigation, because, you know, we're a family company as well, and we want to we want to make sure that we're aligning with a brand that actually cares about the things we care about. So there's another, like, there's another interesting aspect to that whole story that we didn't even bring up. But yeah, so there, I think there are so many different things to look out for this season, that will be exciting to some extent, depending on how you look at exciting. I think the Monaco wrapping up, the Drivers' Championship is probably a little bit of a stretch, but I totally understand and appreciate the, you know, that comment, because it's gonna, I think it'll be pretty quick. If there's one, I guess, piece of advice that I could give people watching this season, especially for newbies, right? This is like, it's painful because you have, we actually have two more years of this. And for newbies that don't understand that, it's like, we have a full, we have this full year, we have all of 25, and then we have new regulations in 26. Unless something massive happens, Adrian Newey decides to go to Ferrari, right? Or Max Verstappen decides to go somewhere else because of whatever situation is happening with Horner, whatever it is, right? It's very difficult to see any difference in the changes. So if you're new and you're coming on board and you're like, all right, I want to watch this cool new sport, I would say, pay attention to what's happening across the entire grid versus just at the top, because you may be, you know, disappointed. And you know, right now in the NFL, right, National Football League, American football, we're dealing with a dynasty in the making with the Kansas City Chiefs, right? Very similar situation. It might look close all year long, and playoffs come and the Chiefs end up winning. And so they've got, you know, three wins in what, like the last 5 years or so, which is pretty demoralizing for a lot of teams, right?
I'd say
we had the New England Patriots before that doing the same thing over, you know, two decades of just, actually it felt like two decades, I don't know, 15 years maybe it was, of just constantly winning, right? And so stuff like this happens in sports. Stuff like this happens in Formula One. Formula One is always been like this, but I would say definitely keep your eyes on other things that are happening, and maybe even, you know, focusing on things that you didn't focus on before, right? Looking at how other teams, especially maybe midfield or lower level teams, how they are upgrading, you know, what kind of upgrades are they bringing? Maybe this is the year that you focus on more the technical aspect and understanding that kind of stuff. I don't know if there's going to be a lot to focus on if you're not a Red Bull, a Red Bull fan, right? It's a fight for second, and it's so hard to say that's a good thing. Like, oh yeah, just, you know, focus on second. But if we have three or four teams that are battling for that second place, that's a pretty, you know, that's a good thing. That's a good thing overall. I mean, it's not as exciting as it could be, but that's pretty cool. If you had that, if you've got three or four teams that are, you know, very, very close and you're fighting for that second, third spot, that's not too bad. You know, that is a pretty exciting, that would be an exciting season, I would say. So it's just a matter of how much can teams offset Red Bull. I would actually be curious to see if teams, you know, if Max is going to be the runaway, you know, of the season, will teams focus on trying to neutralize Checo as much as they can?
Yeah.
And if you neutralize Checo, does that help, you know, in the constructors? Now, again, I'm not saying that because Max alone, with the points that he'll put up, he won't need tons of help, right, from Checo. I was going to say he kind of proved that last year, but Checo still did come in second. So if teams can neutralize Checo, does that help them in that regard? So that'll be interesting to see. You know, it's like, depending on how out of hand it gets and how early it gets out of hand, if that happens, right? Does that change up the strategy? And like, will teams even think of that? You know, will they think like, hey, let's just make sure that Checo doesn't finish so that it's only Max that we have to fight, pretty much, or we're only fighting Max in the constructors' points. Like, that would be an interesting way to approach the season.
But at the same time, I don't know if that's
possible either.
Last season, though, we saw what Carlos Sainz was capable of doing. We saw the kind of race that he was capable of engineering with other drivers. And so I'm thinking that because Lando has a long-term deal with McLaren, we know that McLaren is just, they've been improving. I'm wondering what the upgrades on that Ferrari are actually going to look like when the season on the first race. And if there could maybe potentially be some partnering going on throughout the grid between Carlos and maybe the McLarens to try and keep Checo at bay. Because yeah, if you've got at least two other teams that are competing for that maybe second, third spot, maybe even three teams competing if Mercedes actually gets their shit together this year, then I really see a situation where drivers are going to do what they can to help boost Carlos Sainz's market value. Because I really think that, and yes, Mercedes did come in second in the constructors last year, but as a Mercedes fan, it is really, really frustrating because second, when you're a Mercedes fan, honestly feels like fifth. It's not a good place, especially when the car, you just cannot seem to get anything right on that car and other teams seem to be improving, right? So, and your driver strategy isn't even really as effective as it should be because it seems like there's so much infighting happening that where is the actual strategy? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so it does kind of make Mercedes look like amateur hour, especially last season. But so, yeah, I think that there could potentially be some, I don't want to say collusion, but some maybe partnership, some razzle dazzle going on throughout the grid, because Carlos Sainz does deserve the best team, or if not one of the best teams. I mean, that's not his fault what happened with Ferrari. I think we were all kind of hoping that he would get an extension. And then obviously if your team has an opportunity to sign Lewis Hamilton, you're going to sign Lewis Hamilton. And that's that there isn't a whole lot of thought process that goes into that. So I feel for Carlos right now, and I do think he's a great driver, and I don't think that it would be in his best interest from a talent perspective to wait and go all in with Audi when he has an opportunity, if he does have a shot at that Red Bull seat, to not take it. So, you know, and I don't think that Checo has done enough to get an extension, because I think that they would have given him that extension last year.
Yeah.
And I don't think that extension is coming. So especially if Horner is out, they're going to want to go in a completely different direction, I think,
which is amazing to say that about a guy that just finished second.
Yeah.
In the constructors, that he didn't do enough.
Right.
And I understand that, you know, if you just look at the constructor, you know, the final numbers, like, doesn't tell the whole story, but he still finished second, even with, you know, some DNFs and some poor drive. Like, he still came in second. Like, there was no other op. That was the best anybody could have possibly finished last year, right? Like, let's look at it from that perspective. The best possible finish for anybody not named Max Verstappen was second place.
Yeah.
Right.
But I also think that because he narrowly got into second, and I think that if he hadn't finished second, he possibly could have been out after last season, even. I think that maybe, they were diabolical enough of a team to do that.
Well, so, here's the other thing, too. Like, the year before, he finished third, and he realistically could have finished second had Max just played ball. I'm not a Checo apologist by any stretch. I think, you know, you battle. There's one guy you battle, and that's your teammate, right? But you're almost, you know, you're in a really tough position if you are a Red Bull second driver. It's not exactly, it's not an easy spot to be in. I'm not saying it's easy to be a second driver anywhere, but you are clearly the second driver. There's no hope of you being the number one driver. You know, the car is built around your teammate, or I know there's arguments to say otherwise, but it's, you know, the car is clearly built around Verstappen. That's who they're going into their project, you know, building for. And the strategy is almost always geared towards Verstappen. Well, actually it is, right? They go into a race, you know, it's for Verstappen. So what else is he supposed to do? I mean, yeah, frustration and pressure, that all adds up. He's a professional driver making millions of dollars. You know, people will be like, oh, well, you know, that's what he's supposed to do. But I mean, we're all human. So what else is the man supposed to do? And I think that's where I get kind of like a little sympathetic for him. Like, what else can he do to prove or to show that he's worth, you know, keeping around? I will say this. I don't think he has a seat. He'll end up with a seat, you know, next year.
Really?
I think they end up with his contract's up at the end of this year. So I think next year, yeah, you do end
but
up
do you
seeing
think
an Alex.
He like doesn't have a seat at all for next year.
I don't see where you go. Once you're leaving the top team in the sport at, you know, the moment, where do you go from there?
Okay, right? So hypothetically though, okay, say you're this restructured Haas and they come in there and they say, we want you, you'll be driver number one. It's a seat. Do you take it or do you say hard pass? This is no thanks.
I mean, personally, I if it's me, I'm like, I would pass. Right. And I know people are like, well, that's because you're not an F1 driver and this and that. You don't have the killer. I'm not driving for a team like Haas, especially like, I don't even, did you hear the comments? Did you hear the comments on, let's see, they said something like, oh man, I wish I could find exactly what they said. It was another one of those like really idiotic comments from, I think, was it Komatsu? He's like, we're not testing performance or something like that. We're just,
what?
Yeah. I mean, again, one of those things where you're like, what are you saying?
Yeah. But I also think this is what happens when you promote somebody who is part of the problem. Instead of saying, okay, we can't promote from within, we need a fundamental change at Haas if we actually want some results. So we need to just at some point break the bank to bring someone in who is a serious person to overhaul this team. Otherwise, we're going to sell this team. They're not a serious team, though, and that's the problem.
I really don't think it matters. Like,
yeah.
I don't. There's no, like, I mean, look at Bottas at Alpha, right? Like, even that.
Yeah.
You know, there's no shot at him, you know, anything happening there. You're barely fighting for points every week.
Right.
How do you, you know, if you are Checo, you're at, you know, he's 33 or so. How do you say to yourself, yeah, this is exactly what I want to do. Like, I want to come play. I want to come race
on a JV
for this team who isn't serious. Yeah. Like, there, even a Williams, like there's no team that you could go to that would be like, yeah, this is exactly the situation I want to be at. Now, could I see him end up somewhere like a Aston Martin? I mean, maybe,
possibly.
But like, again, if you're coming from the best team, is that somewhere you really want to go?
Yeah. Well, here's the thing too. And I have talked to people who they've they have the connections to the Red Bull. And basically what has been said about that Red Bull car is that it is built for a full send. Therefore, it requires a full send driver. And that's why Max Verstappen does so well in that car, because he's not, he was in the years that he was sort of coming into Red Bull, he wasn't afraid to get in a car accident. You know, he wasn't afraid to take his shot. He wasn't afraid. It got to a point where drivers almost got afraid when they saw him. And so they just let him have the position because they're like, you're crazy. I don't want to get involved in your shit. Yeah. And he kind of bullied people on track. And that is why he was able to dominate so well, because he kind of got this fearless mentality. Like, you're going to move, I'm going to make you move. And that's why I think it makes it seem like that car is built for him, because in a way it is psychologically, because he's not afraid of what the car can do, because he's that full send driver. Now, it's the drivers that get into the car that don't have that mentality. And you, anytime you flinch in that car, something bad happens. So the car is extremely powerful. It takes a driver who can handle that to be successful in that car, continuously successful. And I think what we saw last year, the reason why we continue having these conversations about Checo is because he started the season off strong and then he started to kind of regress. And it was a noticeable pattern that he was starting to build. And so the fact that he finished P2 in the drivers, I think a lot of that is because of the mistakes that Mercedes made. And Austin is a big one. Austin was fatal for Lewis's shot at finishing P2. And so I think that whoever takes that second spot at Red Bull is going to have to be an absolutely fearless driver who just doesn't give a shit, who says, I'm not afraid of this car and I'm not afraid of competing against Max. And I genuinely think that Max wants a teammate that wants to compete against him. Otherwise, it's going to get boring for him. And he kind of reminds me of the driver that would eventually maybe start to back off a sport if it no longer posed a challenge to him. And maybe that would be great for the sport, but I think he wants a teammate who can challenge him. Now, as far as, you know, where does Checo go? I don't think Checo goes any. I think that if he doesn't have a seat at Red Bull, I don't think it would behoove him to sign any place else. Because like you said, once you've driven that Red Bull, where do you go? Once you've had the taste of success, you're used to champagne flying. That's what you're used to. How do you go back? How do you go to a team where you're face palming the whole weekend? That's tough. But then there's also been rumors that Fernando Alonso has been speaking to Mercedes. So, you know, I think that out of all of the seats right now, that Mercedes seat, that Red Bull seat, and perhaps that Aston Martin seat, depending on how serious Aston Martin decides to get this season, those are the three seats right now. And also, I think the Red Bull, the RB, the V-carb, whatever it's called, depending on what that car can do, truly what that car can do, because if that car ends up kind of looking like the RB19, then let's just throw away all the playbooks, because we don't know anything at that point, you know? Yeah. So there's a lot to look forward to for this season, going back to that conversation also, but yeah, if you're Checo, where do you go from there? I don't see him going anyplace. And I also think that this should be an eye-opener to teams like Haas that says, you have an opportunity to sign a driver like Checo, but he would want nothing to do with your organization because you're an unserious team. So.
Yeah, I just don't, like I said, I don't see it. See him being... I see him being the, you know, a man out of a seat. I just can't see him having that opportunity. To say that, you know, he deserves to not have a seat, but it's really tough. It's, you know, it's a competitive series, and it's, you know, listen, you've got guys like Logan Sargeant and don't deserve a seat, right? There's probably argument. There could be, you could argue about Magnussen and Hulkenberg having a, you know, whether they deserve their seats. Like,
because it's
there's, right. I mean, they're at Haas, right? They're at Haas. So anybody, it's like anybody that can drive there. So yeah, you definitely have to wonder about his future. And, you know, while I think Carlos Sainz would be a great, I don't want to say great, while I think Carlos Sainz would be a, interesting prospect for Red Bull, him and Max did drive together before. So there's that, you know, is he too, you know, maybe he is the perfect fit because he does want to push, right? He is going to kind of fight a little bit more than some of these other guys. Will he do that at Red Bull? I don't know. I mean, he's doing it at Ferrari. You know, he's definitely doing it. He's definitely pushing and trying to be like that number one guy. Even though there's, you know, clearly you're not. I think he could very well go there, but again, you risk making a career move at his age to where you'll end up being on the other side of 30 and, you know, potentially in a really bad mental spot after leaving Red Bull, right? Just like a lot of other drivers were, Gasly, Albon, Ricardo to some extent, right? Like it does a lot to you to come away from Red Bull. So I guess, so let's not to belabor this point. How about this one? And I guess we can kind of wrap up the show here with this question, but where do you, we go into 2026, Ferrari finishes second to Red Bull in the constructors. Hamilton agrees that that's good enough to get into 2026 and say, I'm going to, you know, re-up my year. Cause he's got a 1-1, I think, with Ferrari. So Leclerc and Hamilton go in as the guys for Ferrari for 26. Max wins this year and next and 25. So Max has 5 championships to his name. Red Bull also wins back to back, or not back to back, but they win again. Do you think Max keeps going?
See, that's why I think Max needs a driver who can challenge him as a teammate. And Checo just isn't that. I think he would continue going if he felt like he was at least being challenged by his own teammate. And if Red Bull had a driver, like I said, that was willing to drive in full send mode, like Max was, that would make Red Bull a much more interesting team to follow. So they need to have that fearless driver to push Max, I think. Because Max is getting bored. You can tell. He's so, you know, he used to drive several years ago, 4 years ago or so. He had this passion, this intensity where he would just be so angry on the radio and screaming and move and getting into crashes and arguments with people. And there was a lot of passion and drama there because he just felt like, you aren't on my level. Get on my level and then we can have a conversation. And that's why there was so much infighting, I feel like, with among him and his teammates. And if he didn't like his teammate, I think he had the final say on, in terms of the musical chairs between Red Bull and AlphaTauri.
Sure.
And so that is an incredible amount of power for a driver to have within an organization. I mean, arguably, I would say he had more power than Christian Horner in those, you know, conversations. So I do think that this is Red Bull's kind of opportunity right now to say, we have a shot at usurping all of Lewis Hamilton's records, including his driver's championships. If we can keep this guy interested in driving past this set of regulations. So to do that, they have to get him a teammate that can push him. Because at the very least, if the other teams aren't building cars that can compete against you, that's not your problem. That's their problem. You know, if you've got a problem, fix your fucking car, change your fucking car. that's not Red Bull's fault. That's not Max's fault, but it is Red Bull's fault if they can't get him a teammate who can push him. And Checo just hasn't been that. So that's why.
So I'm that's a really
pushing.
That's actually,
for the potentially signs, because out of any of the drivers on the grid right now, he is the only driver I can see doing that. What were you going to say?
Okay. So I was hoping you would say that because I disagree. And I think there are only two drivers on the grid that could push Max the way he needs to be pushed. I think they are both spoken for, but there are only two.
Yeah.
Lando Norris and Charles Leclerc. I don't think there's anybody else that can truly push Max to the level that would keep him interested. I don't see it. And I don't think either of those guys are available. I thought Lando might become available. Lando seems to like what is going on with the McLaren situation. So I don't think he's leaving anytime soon, but you go into 26, 27, even if Leclerc's not signed long-term, if, Norris is not signed past that year, I'm not suggesting that it's going to happen, but could you see a scenario where one of those guys gets a really, really strong look from a Red Bull and says, we need you to basically just to keep Max around, right? That would make for a really interesting 27.
I don't know, because at some point these drivers, they have to fight for their own. And I think you realize that, do I have an opportunity to kind of be a pawn on a chessboard to help Max, or do I stay with my own team and do my own thing?
And that's where I don't think Carlos is that guy. Unless he decides, okay, I'm going to just suck it up for Max. Like, I don't see Carlos being that way.
But the thing is, which other seat would he go to? Carlos. And I get it. Audi could come in. He could go to Audi. That's a very highly plausible, highly
likely thing.
I think
that's the seat for him. I think that's his seat.
What if he signs a one-year deal with Red Bull just to kind of feel it out?
No, that's a death sentence. Why would you sign a 1-year deal?
I don't know, for funsies.
No, I don't. This is not a sport funsies. I don't think it's. I think you're.
I just don't know who else would go to that Red Bull seat, because, like I said, you've had Pierre Gasly. You've had Okay, I'm drawing blanks.
I think
the other guy.
I think you could have a guy. If they're. Here's the thing. If they're going to be Red Bull and they're going to go after like an Albon, or maybe they go back to try a Gasly again, right?
Yeah, that's whatever.
Right? Because I don't think either of them are a threat to Max at all. I really don't. But I think they've matured enough to where they can get over, where they were last time they were there. But what about someone like a Bottas who understands how to be a number two, knows how to play the support game, knows how to, he'll fight a little bit. Maybe he's past that in his career. He's likable. He brings kind of that branding aspect that Max does not. There's another aspect of that second Red Bull seat that I think you really need to pay attention to, is somebody who has the chops to be, marketable, like Checo is. Checo does a lot of the marketing stuff that Max just won't do. So you have to think about somebody who's going to do that. I think Albon fits that bill. But Bottas really does fit that bill as well. He does fit the whole extreme sport aspect of, Red Bull. He loves going, he loves mountain biking and doing all that kind of stuff. I don't know. I'm not saying that's kind of a wild one on that one. But I think it's... you end up with a more limited selection than you want to believe a top team would have.
Oh,
and it's
sure.
a unique situation, right? I would assume it was very similar with Mercedes during, Lewis's, during his domination, right? You don't really have a ton of options, because who's really going to want to understand that you're going in there to be number two? Like, you're not going in there – to really do much other than be number two. Like,
yeah,
I don't know.
I think if they're going to play the marketing angle, though, I mean, they might as well just call up Daniel Ricciardo from the minors.
Sure. Or, yeah. I mean, I guess that's another one.
I think that would be the play there because he would know his place. But again, at the same time, is knowing your place going to challenge your teammate to a point where he wants to sign an extension, especially if the other drivers on the grid aren't giving it to you?
Yeah.
So, and, you know, Red Bull understands how valuable Max Verstappen is. They know that if they lose Max, it's very unlikely they're going to find a Max Jr. anytime soon. And I know that there's drivers hanging in the wings right now, hoping for their shot, but Max is a once in a lifetime driver, very similar to Lewis Hamilton. And they both come from a different era of Formula One too. So it's, I don't know. If we're going with a marketing play, again, call up Daniel Ricciardo from the minors because that's the driver you need. But if you're looking to challenge Max to a point where you are going to get him to sign an extension because you are going to give him a challenge, then they need to go in a completely different direction. Then maybe they should just sign a junior driver at that point because the junior driver knows his place and he knows that he can also learn from the best driver on the grid right now. So if you're not going to sign somebody marketable or somebody who can challenge you straight away, then you sign a junior driver. And that's just how it's going to go, which is crazy to think that Max could be playing big brother in the final stages of his career at Red Bull. But, you know, weirder things have happened in the sport. So I don't know.
I was going to say, as he gets older, does he mature to the point? I mean, I think he's matured quite a bit over the last few seasons, but does he mature to a point where he's like, yeah, I'm cool being big bro or being the mentor to this young guy who is eventually going to take over my seat. But that's, we're talking about race car drivers here. We're not talking about, any other sport. This is a race car driver that, you know, they're all or nothing. There's no like, yeah, I'm in my later stages of my career. I don't care anymore. Or, I'm willing to just let somebody else win. Like it doesn't really fly with race car drivers. So, and look at someone like a Carlos Sainz Sr. You know, he's still winning races in a very intense sport series at what, 62 years old, 63 years old, whatever he is. So like, these guys are
endurance.
They're not athletes. Yeah. But they're not, you know, I don't know how much they are willing to be mentors, you know, and all the greats, you know, how much are they willing to take someone under their wing? Schumacher, you know, maybe when he came to Mercedes, like in his last season, but you know, he was surely not at Ferrari taking anyone under his wing. He's like, he's dominating. There's no way in hell is he letting anybody win a race, even though they should be winning the race. You know, like there's so many scenarios.
But also, look at Lewis and George. It was believed that when George joined Mercedes, that Lewis was going to be big brother and hey, let me coach you into the thrones of Mercedes. And it was not that at all. In fact, if anything, last year we saw the hand that both of them those drivers were playing. And that wasn't a team sport at all. That was very much, you are my enemy. I am not your big brother and you're going to know your place. So, and that's the dynamic. So this whole idea that, hey, we're an iconic team, we're a storied team, we're going to bring in another guy and you're just going to have to coach him up and play big brother. F that. That's not going to happen. That's not Formula One.
Yeah.
That's F2, F3, like the lower series, that's what that's for. Karting even.
But really, you know, motorsport is the only sport where you're sitting there specifically Formula. I guess you can even go even more specific Formula One. You are, your teammate is who you're beating or trying to beat.
Yeah.
You know, there's no other sport where your teammate is the one that you're trying to knock off the whatever. I don't want, well, I don't say knock off the track because that's not what you do, but like, I'm just trying to liken it to maybe another sport like the NFL.
That is what you do if you're Red Bull.
I guess if you're a Mercedes fan, that's what you believe. I don't know. And so I think everything that we just talked about over the last, 10 minutes or so is what fans can look forward to over the next, 3-4 years or so or let's say 2-3 years is what can happen with all of these, junior drivers or younger drivers, what can happen with the big teams, at some point, just like Mercedes, just like Ferrari before them, just like Red Bull before them, Ferrari before them, Williams before that, McLaren before that, at some point, everything falls apart, right? At some point, drivers want new challenges. You can't figure out the regulations like you could. We're all under the assumption that Adrian Newey can never make a mistake. And I understand that 25 titles and probably says otherwise, right? But at some point, regulations won't be, it'll all fall apart. And I think if that's something that fans can at least hold on to, non-Red Bull fans can hold on to, then there's definitely things to look forward to. It just might be more than just this year. It might be over the course of how are these stories going to play out over the next 2 years, 3 years. Yeah. What new young drivers are going to come up, that aren't on the grid right now at all? There's so much of that we have to look forward to and pay attention to that I think when you realize there's a bigger game at play than just the season in front of us, it does get more exciting. I'm with you on that for sure.
Yeah. Well, and also a lot of the new fans, God, they came into F1 at such an interesting time because, we had COVID, we had lockdowns, we had a sport that was trying to figure things out daily, the logistics of how do we continue this? How do we actually have a season in COVID? And they figured it out. Yeah. And they gave us a great season. 2021 was a great season. And so I think that a lot of fans came into this thinking, wow, F1 is this crazy sport. There's so many challenges. The competition is just there. It's crazy watching these drivers go at each other's throats and this and that. And they got the drama. They got a lot of the drama that we just haven't had in the last two seasons. And again, that's not the fault of Red Bull. It's just, that's just how things are. And so I can understand that a lot of people, they're getting bored right now. Their fuses are getting a little shorter with Formula One. They're thinking this is a ridiculously expensive sport. This is kind of boring. It's extremely predictable. When is the thing going to happen? And that's the beauty of new regulations is that you either get it right or you get it wrong. And the law of averages tells us that in 2026, a team that is not Red Bull is going to get it right. And that you're going to start having, that shift happening. But then again, then you run the risk of having, 5 or so years of having one team being the dominant team. And then you kind of continue the cycle. But again, that's not the fault of that team for getting it right the first time. And then you build on getting it right the first time. And that is the advantage that Red Bull has had.
Yeah.
So, it's a challenge for sure. And I think this is where something like testing is so important. And it's not even so much right now trying to educate or trying to keep existing fans interested. Their objective right now should be about educating new fans on what actually happens in testing. And you don't see a lot of that. You see a lot of fans asking questions in the comments. What's that? What's that metal contraption for? What's that green highlighting fluid? All over? They're asking very basic questions, very fundamental questions about testing and what's going on and what we should be looking for in testing. And are these times good? Is this good? Is this bad? They're not, Formula One just isn't doing a good job right now of educating fans to keep them interested in the concept of testing. And so they need to fix that. Because there are little things that they can be doing right now to increase fan retention that while we're kind of going through this Red Bull era that they're just not doing. So I think that is, that's the biggest mistake the Formula One is making right now. And I mean,
no, that's a great, I hope that's a great, right. No, that's a, I mean, that is a fantastic point that the focus on education just hasn't been there, and how that lack of education ends up, you know, leads us to a scenario where people are confused. The focus becomes only the drama because they don't know anything else.
Yeah.
You know, they start to question whether or not, oh, is this even an interesting sport? Because I don't know why I should be paying attention if the same team wins every time, right? Like there's those questions pop up. So yeah, I think you're spot on with what you're saying there.
Yeah. I mean,
it is. I mean, go ahead.
For example, I mean, today I saw a comment that somebody said, what are you talking about by the sim? Data from the sim, what is that? And it's like, this would be a fantastic time for teams to have their engineers do a rundown on what is CAD, you know, in motorsport. What is computer-aided design? How does it affect the car? What are we actually looking for in testing? Yeah. It's just, it's not there, and it's so frustrating.
And I'll go even further and say, like, that's not necessarily, like, I personally don't believe that that is necessarily on the teams, right?
Yeah.
The series itself, F1,
yeah,
should invest time.
It's on F1. You know,
I'm gonna beat an idea that we've talked about in the past, but like, why isn't F1 leveraging the slew of creators that are educating?
Yeah.
If they're not going to do it themselves, right? Mm-hmm. But the slew of creators that are educating people day in, day out, you know, Twitch streams, YouTube, TikTok, whatever it might be. Why aren't those folks being embraced or at least promoted in a way that allows newbies to be like, oh, this is a reputable, verifiable source? And people, it actually is funny to me. And I don't want to keep this episode going too long, but it is funny to me when people tell me like, wow, this is the first time I've seen such and such a comment. I had sent out a newsletter today about the logistics of Formula One, and somebody was like, wow, this is so fascinating to understand this or see all this. I've never seen this before. And I'm thinking to myself, wow, because I've seen it 15 times, 20 times from others that kind of gave me the inspiration and the idea to do it. F1 has actually done it themselves. DHL did something. DHL's F1's logistics supply chain partner. So I'm like, wait a minute, I've seen this so many times, and you as a new person or newer person haven't seen this at all? Like, this is actually kind of wild to me that you have zero idea of, you know, a piece of content like this. So, and I'm sure that's not just that, right? The technological aspect of the series is even more insane, and there's more questions when it comes to technology and whatnot. And if people don't know where to look for that, or they don't know where to find it, you know,
how that's
you're doing a disservice to the new fan. So I'm definitely with you on that one.
But that, I feel like they do rely on content creators because they know content creators are making this stuff for free. Like, look at what we're doing right now. The problem is that Formula One could very easily go to these creators and say, hey, we like what you did here. Can we work together and possibly put this on our channels? We'll compensate you. We'll do this for you, et cetera, et cetera. Sure. Let's do cross promotion here because we've got the content creators who are making this information possible. But these fans don't really know where to look, number one, or they do know where to look, but they're not sure if that's the information because everyone has an opinion. Does it make it right? Maybe not. But having that verification from Formula One itself or the teams themselves that this is exactly what goes on, this is exactly what happens, we can verify this, that gives that verification to the fans to let them know this is accurate information. And that is, that's kind of, I think at the bottom, at the core of what right now is missing in the sport. And there are only so many things I think that Formula One can do logistically. They could realistically hire full-time content creators and say, we're going to put a team of 15, 20 really, really solid content creators out there that are going to be putting all of this information, you know, on our channels for us. But we could also partner with people who are already doing it. And that is that, I think, and it's interesting too, because networks, all of these things, they look right now, even teams are looking at content creators right now to help them boost their product, to help them boost their team. And so the people are already out there making the stuff happen. Why not take the low-hanging fruit and actually give some verification to it? And I think that's just, I can understand where you're a fan, if you're a fan and you're trying to get into this new, you know, trying to understand different nuances of the sport because you're bored with the actual racing itself. It's got to be a challenge for people, because where do you look? Where do you look? And I've seen a lot of people posting TikToks and reels, and the information isn't accurate. It's a challenge right now for sure. And I think F1, we talk about these growing pains that the sport continues to have. And you've got people like you, Molly, et cetera, making all this content that is good, real, legit content. And it's, where is it going? So
it is a valid question.
Frustrating.
That I think we strive to push, right? Where that's what this show is about. That's what the content that, you know, I know I create is to help push and educate and help people understand more about the sport outside of the sport, so to speak. So I know that I want to continue that. I hope that people that are listening to this enjoy what it is that we're doing and what we're creating, and whatever it is that we can help you understand more, please reach out, ask. I'm Vincenzo Lindy on Twitter. I respond to my messages. V is VVF Castro on Twitter. She responds to her, messages that are sent out to her. And so if there is things that, we can do to better your experience, let us know, and let us know what you want to hear on the show, or let us know what kind of content you want us to create. And, we'll be there to do that. We are listening for sure. That's all I got for today.
Yeah. Next week we'll be back doing kind of a testing recap, preseason
and then preview,
stuff.
Bahrain preview.
Yeah. So we'll be back. This is going to become a weekly thing again, you guys. So go ahead and subscribe, give us 5 stars, all the things. We got you.
We will see you on the next one.
Bye.
Ciao.
Thank you so much for tuning into the VF1 show. If you liked it, please don't forget to hit the subscribe button. And for previews of next week's show, follow us on Instagram and Twitter at the VF Castro and Vincenzo Landino.